Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over there in Studio B on this wonderful afternoon is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you, sir?
Fine, Don, really, on this very lovely day here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Until our listening audience, locally, domestically, and internationally, beautiful day here. We certainly like to see a 90-degree day one of these days, they say sometime next week. But what more can you say? Of course, we are more than the land of 10,000 lakes. 35 counties here in Minnesota under a state of emergency, if you will, looking to get some of that FEMA money. You know, we haven't really seen a lot of that since the tornadoes. But what more can you say? Don, I want to take this occasion to indicate the passing of the first director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, the renowned and world-renowned, the Reverend Dr. Lillian Anthony, who passed from this life on the 26th of last month, Don, June, in Louisville, Kentucky, where it had been her home for the last 40 years. She retired 20 years ago as the head of compliance, affirmative action, and social policy of the Presbyterian Church of America, if you will. In fact, there will be a very distinguished memorial for her on the 11th of July in Louisville, Kentucky, and we want to indicate our farewell, if you will, and condolences to all. She was very loved and beloved within the Presbyterian Church and etc. And, of course, that's quite a distinction for an African-American, you know what I'm saying, Don?
Yeah.
She was a tremendous affirmative action director, civil rights director, really. And as I said before, the first appointed by then-Mayor Arthur Naftalin in the summer of 1967. She left in late 1969 after refusing to bend to the new mayor-elect, the former police officer, now also deceased, Charles Stenbig. So I'm aware that there is no history. I've had conversations with the Minneapolis Star Tribune, was trying to get them to write a obituary as it pertains to Miss Anthony, but they say they don't have any documentation. We do, and in fact, on our television program to air Sunday, as well as our column in the Spokesman Recorder, we make additional reference and pay additional respect to the Reverend Dr. Lillian Anthony, who passed away at age 88 in Louisville, Kentucky. Okay?
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And on that same vein, Mr. Edwards, I would like to send our condolences out to the family of Dr. Nigerian. His son, Paul, who graduated in 1979 from Minneapolis Central High School, passed away early this week after a long illness. And there's a lot of information on Facebook about what's going on. And Paul was a go-to guy. And I remember 1979, him and another young lady, they're both the best bodies of the school. And he'd wear his Elvis costume on stage or tell jokes. He was a pretty remarkable guy. I mean, he was an athlete, and Mr. Edwards, you know, I wasn't an athlete. I was in the marching band. But the guy was just, you know, level-headed. And we actually, the night of prom, me and my date, we ended up at their house on Lake Harriet for the after party, as we put it. And so we had a good time. Some really good memories of that young man. And he's going to be missed, dearly missed.
Don, I think it's important because you happen to mention their home, family home on Lake Harriet. I think it's important to indicate that his father, Dr. Nigerian, was one of the greatest surgeons in the United States, a legend within the medical community, and certainly enhanced the University of Minnesota's School of Medicine, Surgery, and Internal Medicine, if you will. Also, his brother, in fact, was a All-American football player in college and played a couple of years of professional ball. And so you're right. They were a family of doctors and yet athletes and achievers. And our condolences from this studio goes out also to the Nigerian family.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Edwards, we got kind of a some craziness, you know. Well, before I get to the craziness, I would like to congratulate the Council on Black Minnesotans Economic Summit. We're finding out more news by the minute as far as Senators Bobby Joe Champion and Senator Jeff Hayden attempting to dismantle the council into the human rights of the state, the human rights division department, I should say, of the state of Minnesota, and to further marginalize the African American community. So, but they had a great event over the weekend. There was a lot of events going on. The attendance wasn't really where they wanted it to be, but, you know, people participated, and I guess that's the most important thing.
Absolutely. And this was at the Carlson School of Management and Business, if you will?
Yes, the Carlson School of Management on the University of Minnesota campus. And, I mean, it was great. I mean, I had a great time, and I really enjoyed it. And I hope they do something, you know, they develop something out of that to keep the ball rolling. So with that said,
in fact, I know you have to be somewhat modest, so I take up that. I understand that you were a formal presenter on Saturday at the Carlson
School.
Yes, I did. Is that correct?
Okay. I presented, and there's a lot of great presenters, and I just happened to get lucky and go ahead and present. So.
Okay. Well, it appears, Mr. Allen, a lot of things. And by the way, the phone lines are open. One of the things we may want to touch on, anyone has any questions, the immigration debate that is going on. I don't think that we've really heard from Black America, per se. And that's something certainly our phone lines are open to talk about. This whole thing of immigration, and particularly what happened in California over the last 2 days, where in cities along the Mexican border, California-Mexican border, where American citizens have actually blocked the entrance or the further travel of illegal aliens or immigrants, as they call them, who have attempted to be our disseminated, if you will, throughout the United States and et cetera. And, man, it's really tense out there right now. And this comes on the heels of a couple of young Latino immigrants being found shot to death along the border in Texas, if you will, as since Governor Perry of Texas indicated that he was sending National Guard and militia. We haven't heard the thing about militia since Concord and Lexington.
Yeah.
Since the militia was sent in along the Texas-Mexican border, there has been gunfire and et cetera. In fact, a Mexican Army helicopter straight across American territory and opened fire on a group of Border Patrol officers. And, of course, the United States filed immediate protests with the Mexican ambassador in Washington. But tensions are running very, very high. I've talked to some of our stringers, if you will, in Texas, and they said we're not even beginning to get the information, Mr. Allen, about the tension and heavily armed militia and others, white, if you will, in that particular area. And the president is trying to initiate some kind of action. The Congress, by the way, has indicated it has no intention of dealing with any kind of immigration bill in this session of the Congress, and good luck in 2015, and really good luck in 2016. So, but immigration on the minds of many, and certainly the phone lines, are certainly open for that. But also, Mr. Allen, I understand there have been some real heavyweight meetings with Governor Mark Dayton on
the
future of activity, education, public safety, the program we talked about last week to some degree, my brother's keeper, if you will. I understand some of our leaders have indicated that they are putting in, once again, for funding, if you will, for the program our brother's keeper. This comes on the heels of a meeting at the Urban League last Wednesday, and then immediately following that, this meeting, this emergency meeting with Governor Mark Dayton. So, you know, maybe we can get some follow-up. I haven't seen any press. Have you seen any press releases on the meeting, Mr. Allen?
You know, Mr. Edwards, that's not the modus operandi of this group, you know, that go meet with the governor and don't tell the community members, or probably didn't have a scrap of paper to drop off and did not leave with anything. And, you know, it's the same old same.
Oh, no. Mr. Allen, I must correct you, sir. Must correct my opposite number. I am told that there were some real heavy discussions about funding for the individuals in question and organizations that they are affiliated with, if you will. What we'll do, we'll see if we get anybody to call us and see if there's any interest and call us and ask us if we would identify who the three leaders were that met with Governor Mark Dayton last Thursday morning, as I understand it. Mr. Allen is not well thought of right now. I have to say that about you, Mr. Allen, because there's concern that you apparently called in on an urban radio station Sunday and asked about the meeting and et cetera, and lo and behold, people were saying they didn't know anything about the meeting, couldn't speak to it. We're going to try to find out what went on. But in the meanwhile, I have to tell our listening audience that Mr. Allen makes contact with some of his Republican operatives, and they knew all about the meeting. They knew what was discussed and what kind of promises were made, 1,000 jobs, if you will, 500 African Americans will get their GEDs, if you will, you know what I'm saying, which is fascinating. And I'm not sure what the number is. I know that the African American Leadership Council, used to be the African American Leadership Forum, right, are negotiating now a $250,000 package involving William English and some others to do something about my brother's keeper. You know what I mean? And then we have that truancy plan that's supposed to be in place.
Yes, that's just scary altogether, yeah. Mr. Edwards.
So I imagine you're already getting some text messages over there in Studio A, if you will. I'm seeing some. Yeah, on my computer. Phone lines are open. Give that phone number out. Phone lines are open.
Phone lines are right open. 347-426-3904. 347-426-3904. And we invite you to, you know, give us a call. Anybody out there, you know, I asked a couple people to call in, and maybe those guys that were in the, guys or gals, because we're not really sure which three community leaders were actually in the meeting, but if you guys know these people or these people are listening, we'd appreciate a telephone call kind of just letting us know, you know, to give a community the update about, you know, what crumbs you're going in there trying to snatch.
Don, here's a text message I just received. I will not identify the sender in the way that I have mine set up in such a way you send me a text message, your name has to and telephone number has to show up as part of that NSA training. Oops. But they're saying here to me, and if it is incorrect, I mean, certainly we encourage the person we're getting ready to name, that the Reverend Jerry McAfee indicated that he met under the auspices of the NAACP, which is supposed to have a meeting this Saturday, the day after the 4th of July. Are you aware of that, Mr. Allen? Because you are still a member in good standing in the NAACP.
Yes. I'm actually a silver lifetime member now. And so,
you're a lifetime member.
Yes, I
am. I remember how badly they talked about you, Mr. Allen, back in February and March. And here you are, a lifetime member.
Yes, I am.
Wow.
Yes, I am. In good standing. I have not been.
Wow.
To the
now, do you think that the meeting with the governor or the gov will be on the agenda for Saturday? I suspect the meeting will be, 10 o'clock Saturday morning?
Yeah, you know, the thing is with this, Mr. Edwards, according to the, and you know this better than I do because you've been, you know, president of the NAACP here in Minneapolis, and you ran, you're mover and shaker. So you know that if a branch of the NAACP has no secretary, has no first and second vice president, has no treasurer, and not all but two of the elected officials that were elected December 13, 2013 in the basement of New Salem Missionary Baptist Church.
I have to correct you, Mr. Alvin. I have to correct you. I understand there's only one. There's not two.
Okay.
There's only one. And that would be the president, the Reverend Jerry McAfee.
Well, they do not – Mr. McAfee cannot create a quorum by himself. Okay.
I don't get into that as a member who was expelled from the NAACP a decade ago for calling attention to theft and, you know, things like that. But I'm just saying I expect that we will, that you members of the NAACP will have a full report on what was obviously a very important meeting with Governor Mark Dayton. You know, I'm most interested in, like, the education and certainly public safety discussions that went on, including getting guns off the street. Oh, by the way, two more young African-Americans shot and wounded in North Minneapolis yesterday.
Oh, no.
Yes, not funny, but it is a concern because we get so now we don't even report assaults because a shooting in which the person does not succumb to death is considered to be an assault. And so, man, I mean, there's just so many shootings going on in a sector. It's unbelievable. But, again, the phone lines are open. As I said, a very, very heavy meeting with Governor Mark Dayton by leaders of community, if you will. And we are now being told again we were texted. We see two other texts have now come in to us saying that this was a meeting called by the NAACP.
Oh, wow. And, you know, Mr. Edwards here, I am logging in because someone just told me to check my email, and I am actually in the other studio frantically getting to that email account for the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. And it's loading, and as it loads here, an undisclosed source has named Summit Academy OIC's Lewis King and community activist Spike Moss as the other two people that attended the meeting with the governor along with the Reverend Jerry McAfee. So that's going to that's pretty interesting, Mr. Edwards, because that brings up a lot of questions about what is the purpose, okay? And we were talking earlier in the production meeting. Now, you know, we have a solid thesis. Things in the black community are on a roller coaster to the bottom, basically. And we have enough evidence. You know, we know that there is no functioning in NAACP. We know that people that are represented by Lewis King may or may not be getting jobs. We haven't seen a report that has anything successful in it. I haven't seen one. And what is Mr. Moss representing? And this is not to reflect negatively on any of these gentlemen, but, you know, without information, unfortunately, you know, Ms. Harris, they do not have a platform to tell anybody anything except to start a whisper campaign. So,
well, but let me correct you, my colleague on the right, because both yesterday and this morning, at 7 o'clock, allegedly at 7 o'clock a.m. this morning, the NAACP led a demonstration and were to block the construction going on at the corner of West Broadway and Lyndale in North Minneapolis. Both yesterday, that protest was broke off because of the high-profile double shooting on Weber Parkway in North Minneapolis. But they came back, and I assumed that we probably had anywhere from 35 to 40 to 50 demonstrators. And the project, I'm assuming, again, my text line is open, though if there are any specific questions, people have to call. But I assume that that the construction has been closed down there, the Taco Bell just down the street where there's construction, and we've seen nothing but white workers. The construction down, oh, just behind Mr. King there, behind his facility there on Olson Highway, behind him back on Glenwood is the Washburn Child Experimental Center or whatever. And then, of course, we have the grandfather of all projects going on, the massive, massive $1 billion and change Viking Stadium with over average workforce daily now is about 1,100 workers. Okay? So we've got, there's a lot of fluidness going on right now, and a lot of work out there for our young black men and women, okay? And but people keep saying to me that they're not seeing it, and I said, well, you must be mistaken. You know, I mean, people must be being mean-spirited. But people are saying to me that they don't see any African Americans on any of these projects. Now, I've checked some of the projects, but, you know, maybe these old eyes, if you will, don't see that good or something like that, and we don't see them. But Don, I have to tell you, sir, the text messages are coming in the studio here. Boy, woo!
It's off the heat of Zini.
I don't know. What is happening? So there are some additional things, and I'm just saying back to one of the text messages that just came in. We are sworn to confidentiality with regards to a number of things. So rest assured that I'm talking in terms of here in Studio B, and so you know. there's supposed to be another meeting with the governor, I understand, too, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, because, I don't understand, because I was just, can we need all the facts for this, Mr. Edwards, because there's some scary stuff going on here. And just let me, oh, wow. They're
oh, my God, our private
right.
lines and everything are coming open. But again, we'll give out the number. If you want to talk to us, you have to call the call-in number. Give that number again, Mr. Allen.
Yes, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And we appreciate a call from maybe the president of the Minneapolis NAACP or the state conference, and kind of find out where the NAACP is at this point, because it seems to be nowhere and moving very slowly.
Well, let me say this, because news is important, et cetera. I know there are some people out there that say that this, that some of us always are stirring stuff up, you know, manure and et cetera. But, you know, when you're giving factual information, I don't know how that's stirring anything up. I understand that the state conference president, Mr. W.C. Jordan, was to have been in Minneapolis on Saturday, but canceled his travel plans. There are rumors out now that part of this had to do with current investigation going on in Olmsted County, where Rochester is located, and the investigation has to do with attempted negotiations with the Mayo Clinic. Remember, we first broke that story about 5 months ago?
Mm-hmm.
And there was an attempt to, you know, now the Mayo Clinic, very, very, very powerful institution, maintaining that they felt that they were being unfairly pressured and that there may have been a tad bit of fraud and misrepresentation. I don't know if the Rochester situation was discussed with Governor Dayton. Again, phone lines are open. Anyone that thinks they may have information with regards to any discussions with the governor, because some of our leaders up this way were saying that they could bring a workforce into Rochester, working on both the Mayo Clinic and St. Mary's Hospital. In fact, there were a group of Somalis who thought that they were going to get work in Rochester on the Mayo Clinic, and I guess none of that happened, if you will. And so, Mr. Allen, my position is, in light of this very important meeting with Governor Mark Dayton, if you will, in an election year in which 1,000 jobs were discussed and educational opportunities far exceeding anything that Manassas Public Schools can do in the Sutro, I mean, our community needs to know this.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Our community really needs to know this. So, again, our phone lines are wide open.
Yeah, and don't be scared to pick up the phone. Miss GP, come on, give us a call. Incident over in North Minneapolis that I'd like her to fill us in on. But getting back to this, Mr. Edwards, you know, I've been over North every day for the last couple of weeks. And I see a real decline in students, our black students that attend the Minneapolis public schools. It's very troubling to see the responses that you get, you know, for someone that's in training to be an educator and to practice what you've been trained to do and get responses like, I will go home and come back here and deal with you. From someone in the fourth grade.
Oh, my God. You mean kind of like terroristic threats?
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm telling them, I'm saying, hey, guys, you know, and I can speak candidly to these children without identifying them, but I said, you know, the mainstream thinks we're animals. And by demonstrating this behavior, and I asked them some simple questions, okay? I said, let's start, who was the first president of the United States?
Uh-huh.
Nobody knew. Nobody knew, Mr. Edwards. I had fourth graders to 11th graders. I said, who represents you in the Congress for the 5th Congressional District? Who is your congressman for this neighborhood? No one knew.
Is that right, Mr. Allen? And that, though, I bet you they could have told you who Beyonce was married to.
Oh, they know Beyonce, Kanye West, Kim Kardashian, the twerk. I mean,
now, is
that
the Kardashian
stuff
that's in the porno?
I got that link.
Well, you know, we have families listening to the program, but I mean, I needed to have clarification on which Kardashian you're talking about.
Okay. we have a couple of calls.
Oh, let's
caller,
let's get
you
calls
are live
in,
on
Mr.
the air. Go ahead, please.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Hello?
Sir.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sir,
well, I identify myself as Mr. M. I tend to call this program every now and then. I really love what you guys are doing.
Thank you, sir.
And the reason I'm calling today is when Mr. Allen started to talk about education and lack of thereof in the Twin Cities, and, you know, and I started thinking about how today's world, you know, you have to have a high school, you have to have college, you have to have graduate degrees, and, you know, but you also have to have opportunities to pursue those things. And, you know, I was thinking about one person, you know, in the Twin Cities area, and I'm going to, you know, Miss Arnella. I know you both probably know Miss Arnella.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the reason I bring her up is she's a business owner in St. Paul, and actually, for what I know, she's the only black person that owns a nightclub-type business in the Twin Cities area, which is appalling in itself to say that. It's a sorry, sorry statement to be able to make. If it's true, from what I know, it may not be true, but from what I see, it is true.
Uh-huh.
And why I
she's also that, she also apparently may be the only African American who owns a liquor license in Minnesota.
And the story gets worse, doesn't it? The story gets worse.
Yes, it does.
And so the reason I bring that up and how I put it to education is, this is a young lady that was able to work herself up. You know, now, I don't know anything about her educational background. I've known her for many years. But I know for a fact that she started out working as a, you know, dishwasher, bartender, waitress, manager for individuals like Jimmy Fuller, Mr. Cash's establishments. And we had individuals like that in businesses that could nurture people, that you could learn.
Wow.
You didn't have to go to Rasmussen. You didn't have to go to – you could learn on the job to do that. And what
okay.
she was able to do was nurture under those wonderful businessmen. You know, I mean, Ash is at a bar downtown Minneapolis.
Brutus Cassius was his full name. You're absolutely correct. Who, by the way, was a union organizer in his younger day in the 1930s, which gave him the political clout to become the first liquor license proprietor here in the city of Minneapolis, Brutus Cassius, if you will. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But,
well,
back,
we have some other callers holding him. Anything else specifically?
Only that, when we don't have those kind of situations to nurture ourselves, I mean, we have to go to the mainstream education. They failed us. They continue to fail us. We pay our taxes. We do everything that we need to do, but we're not graduating. The rates are dismal. And in mentioning education, that's and one other point, I know you have other callers, but at the beginning of this country, when there were, there were no law schools. Individual lawyers, because they knew somebody that was a lawyer, and they studied under them for a year or two, and they got their license. So the opportunities were just abundant for people to get land, to get education, to get training, and they don't exist today. That's my only point.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you very
appreciate
much for the call.
All right, thank you.
Caller, you're live on the air. You've been holding for 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello? Yes, you're live on
the air. I just called to give a shout-out to you both, two of my greatest heroes. And this is Barb Davis White calling.
Oh, Miss White, how are you? Nice to hear you. All right.
Well, I'm in North Dakota. I'm doing an experiment. I went to work for a government company. I didn't want to talk about government anymore. I wanted to go and involve myself in a government company. And it's absolutely a nightmare on Elm Street. But I'm doing the experiment, so no one can say, we're just talking about things and how this country's run and the government agencies. I'm actually working in one, so I'm out here in North Dakota. Yeah, and I'm really enjoying watching. The people are fantastic, by the way, but the whole government setup in terms of what Mr. M just shared about us getting up and developing something and doing our thing and Donna, you had a wonderful point yesterday on Facebook that we treat business like nonprofits, that we're just supposed to skate by and treat it like an agency that we donate something to people and then we take a huge salary for doing that, like the President of the United States. But anyway, we're not nonprofit. In our life and in our being, we have to go out and make a living and have our purpose and do stuff that's substantially getting the next generation ready. And the next generation is in trouble because we're in trouble. We are in trouble as, baby boomers who just kind of are still waiting for permission to be okay and be liked. And, I just vomited the whole idea of I have to prove myself over and over and over again to be liked when I've got an education, I've done all the right things, jumped through the right hoops that they said I should. Well, the time has come where we have to get up and start using our brains for something other than a hat rack and get up and teach by doing. We can't just talk about it. We have to teach by doing, by living it. And,
Hear, hear. Go ahead.
Things can happen. Wonderful things can happen. I'll be back in Minnesota. I'll be back to the land where nothing is allowed pretty soon. But I want to come back full of fire, and I want to come back and be a troublemaker for the leftists who think that we are still enslaved by ideas and economics and Planned Parenthood.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right. You be safe up there in North Dakota. We appreciate you calling from North Dakota.
Yeah, thanks, Barb.
Well,
because
thanks.
They tell Mr. Allen and myself nobody listens to us except maybe a couple dogs or et cetera. All these calls keep coming in from far and wide. All right.
Yeah,
we'll be looking to, in fact, have you on our program upon your return.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thanks for
watching. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Get that number out again, Mr. Allen. I mean, the phone lines are open.
Yes.
Appreciate calls coming out of North Dakota and the Central.
Yes. 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If you got a cell phone, dial it up. Well, Mr. Edwards, we got to get back to this because I was just talking. We were just talking about, you know, I got an email telling me, confirming the three people that were at the meeting, but, you know, I have an email from the Minnesota Department of let me get close here. I forgot. Let me put my glasses on. Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, commonly known, affectionately known as DEE. Summit Academy, Morton Construction Company in Golden Valley, is a joint venture, $200,000. A project between Morton Construction and Summit Academy, OIC, will provide 120 individuals over a two-year period training through the industry-recognized pre-apprentice construction program. Graduates from the training will have interviews with Mortenson and other hiring companies this November to be eligible to work in 2015. So does this mean that the people that are sitting on the union bench are being bypassed? And how is Mortenson going to use Green Summit Academy graduates when Thor is supposed to be their kind of go-through?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, Mr. Allen. I mean, you know, you and I are basically on the toll roads, the dirt roads running next to the superhighways, if you will. So, you know, it's hard to keep up with all that fast traffic and et cetera. But I'm a little puzzled. I've been hearing about that, and I heard about the contract and the arrangement. And I know that Thor Construction, as you said, the terminology, has been really the go-to person, the go-to guy, if you will. I'm a little bit uneasy because in March of this year, Mr. Louis King, Major Louis King, United States Army, said on a urban contemporary program that there would be upwards of 120 African-Americans working on the Viking Stadium as of the 1st of July in the year of our Lord, 2014. Now I'm hearing dates of 2015 for some other kind of project. I'm trying to figure out, I have to mention him, Mr. Allen, if Mr. Tuttle and his group is going to make available formal reports, if you will, which indicate what the hours are that have been worked by African-Americans on the Viking Stadium since they began actual work under the auspices of the contract that they have with the construction companies and et cetera. I would project at this hour, upon the information being kept by some of our consultants on the West Coast who follow this, that African-Americans should have, based on Kevin Lindsay's doctrine of two-thirds, should now have worked at least a half a million hours.
Yeah.
Because that's how they're keeping the total, if you will. And this comes at a difficult time when Velma Corvell and the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department are facing some inquiries with regards to the changing numbers. Numbers changed again, Mr. Allen, since the last time we talked.
Mm-hmm.
Different numbers than the ones they gave Eric Roper and the Minneapolis Star Tribune about 2 weeks ago. Okay. Different numbers than those that are being reported to Bongang, the chair of the committee in which the Civil Rights Department reports to. I'm not understanding how these numbers become so fluid when they are supposed to be numbers that are absolute. That is the proper term.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute in the sense that they're numbers that have been worked, and so there are certainly then numbers that are certifiable. We raised this question in our column and on these programs with my associate and co-host, Mr. Allen. Will that information be forthcoming? The first numbers, by the way, were supposedly submitted in January to the Legislative Oversight Committee of the Minnesota Legislature under the co-chairs, including Senator Bobby Joe Champion, who is the co-chair of the committee. Mr. Allen and I asked for those numbers, those certified numbers, and we never received them, did we, Mr. Allen?
Oh, no, we did not, sir. No, we did not.
Yeah. We're now asking for if we could get those numbers from Mr. Tuttle and the Sports Facilities Authority. Looks like they're not forthcoming. And as I said before, this comes at a time when we are hearing about investigations in Olmsted County with regards to attempted negotiations with the Mayo Clinic and St. Mary's Hospital there. Oops.
Yeah.
The whole thing about what happened to training that was to have been provided to Somali workers, if you will. And so I'm just puzzled on when this information will be forthcoming, because I go back to what you had said earlier, and we had a caller who may be calling in.
Yeah,
all
we have callers.
Black folks standing on the corners in North and South Minneapolis with no employment opportunities. I'm not understanding what's happening.
Neither am I. We do have another caller. And caller, you are live on the air. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you guys tonight?
Real good,
I'm doing great. How are you?
You know what your last statement, Ron, is speaking profound. When you think about this new $20 mayor, and how what she has done to what she has lacked there has done to not only not provide jobs for minorities here in Minnesota and Minneapolis, excuse me, but the fact that the education rate is only graduating half of our minority students is ridiculous.
At best, thank you, sir.
At best, absolutely, and the fact that the crime rate is skyrocketing. And she's ignoring it as if she's blind in one eye and can't see out the other.
it's a big, you're absolutely correct.
That the $20 mayor is purposely ignoring the black community right now.
I think that's absolutely correct.
Definitely
correct. Let me say, sir, in that we have you and you've raised the issue, we would call attention, and again, we would encourage the council member, Bong Yang, to call in. Lines are open for him, because I'd like to discuss with him a letter sent by a Asian organization, copied to a lot of folks. Unfortunately, Don, they didn't copy it to IBNN News or the National Research Institute and Black Focus and things like that, but that's okay. I mean, we understand it. But letter is in my possession. A copy was provided by high-ranking members of the city council. And, you know, they call for Velma Corvell's immediate resignation based on her insulting statements back in last year on the 13th of June. But one of the things that has come up is that the African-American leadership groups are saying that they will go to the wall, that they will commit, you know, Harry Caray, Val Calla, and all that, in order to defend Velma Corvell. And the caller we have on the line right now raises an interesting question, that the mayor seems to be quite comfortable ignoring the African-American community. And so, caller, I just needed to say that in support of what you're saying, sir.
And it's amazing that this is a lady that's married to a black man. And I, you know, kind of want to use that word loosely. No, he's a brother. But the fact that you are married to a brother, that you know, you should have a little bit of an inkling as to some of the goings-on in the black community. Are they that disattached from reality and the community that they cannot put a simple, small job bill together to help employ minorities, and not only that, help education, help educate minorities. It's becoming ridiculous, and the black leadership, so-called black leadership, no one told in her feet to the fire. Blong Yang, I don't know if he's – I know a lot of his constituents happen to be of Asian descent, but I think he has to know that he was also elected by black folks in the community.
66% of his ward, the fifth ward, are African Americans. Go right ahead, sir. 66%.
Yes, there it is. There it is. So if he thinks that he just got elected by his people, no. So to go on neglecting us, but no one holding any of those leaders – loosely leaders, to the fire. It's ridiculous. Something has to be said in order for the light to be shined on the lack job, the lackluster job that the $20 mayor is doing, and that the city council members are doing. They're supposed to be representing the particular wards and minorities in the community. I mean, look, when you look at the fact that Phyllis Kahn may be on her way out because the Somali community want to elect one of their own, you know, that to me speaks volumes of people getting together and wanting and caring about the issues of the community and wanting something done and getting rid of someone that isn't doing something for the community. That's what we've got to do.
Right. Okay. All right, my brother, appreciate it. We've got a couple other calls holding, and we want to give everybody a chance to get in because we are like you, sir, a caller. We're trying to get an answer to the questions of some of the many promises that were made, and most importantly, the promises made centering around economic development, economic surges, economic opportunities, and et cetera. I don't see it happening, but I know on the other hand, the governor was asked for some additional money, and the governor was told a lot of information that actually came out of a meeting the prior day from a group of individuals who came there with the best of intentions, if you will, to try to make a difference. And a lot of them wound up finding out that their ideas and actions and et cetera were pirated, okay? And I just wish that when folks were talking to the governor last Thursday that they would have said, these are ideas that were generated, Governor, at a meeting just yesterday at the Minneapolis Urban League by a broad cross-section of African-Americans. In fact, there was only one Caucasian in the room, and that happened to be the man who was head of the homicide unit, and he brought some very, very significant information. In fact, let me say this. Gentlemen, last night, Jay Coles, KSTP, for those that want to go back and take a look and listen, Jay Coles ran a piece in which someone had leaked to him, inside the police department had leaked to him the fact that we are in a situation now where this police department is so undermanned by at least 70 officers, if not over 100 officers, that we've had situations in North Minneapolis that there had been no more than 3 or 4 squad cars on the street. Now, the public information officer tried to indicate that that wasn't true, but in the meeting, last Wednesday at the Urban League, high-ranking Minneapolis police officers indicated that there's big trouble, okay? They were very upfront, and it had a lot to do with burglaries, assaults, rapes, and the whole kind of thing. And so I would wish that when people go to meet with high-ranking authorities, such as the governor of the state of Minnesota, the Honorable Mark Dayton, that they would be at least kind enough to the people that brought the information forward to indicate that, Governor, this is information coming from a broad base of African-Americans, you know what I mean? And it's so sad that didn't happen because it leaves the impression with the governor that these are the three wise men. Oops. Thanks, caller.
He's left. He's listening. We have a couple of calls, but they're in the queue. They just want to remain in the queue, so we're going to leave them there.
Oh, they just want to remain in the queue. Okay, then. All right. Do you have any questions, my colleague, because I know you were not at the meeting last Wednesday, and certainly you wouldn't be invited to the meeting with the governor. But do you have any questions with regards to that meeting? Because that meeting provided a wealth of information and knowledge and was a hell of a cross-section of African-Americans who are working diligently to try to provide opportunity, safety, if you will, vision and advancement to the African-American community and the masses. And I just felt bad that so many people who laid out in that 2.5-hour meeting, that so many of their ideas were taken and they were not given credit, if you will, Mr. Allen, that these were the ideas of others. You know what I'm saying? I mean, maybe that's not important anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, that's really a dirty rotten shame that folks would do that just because, you know, they've been doing that for a while, Mr. Edwards. You go in a room and turn on the light, they run out and tell people that their ice cubes are colder than yours down the street here. And so this has been a stigma in our black community here in Minnesota for some reason because, I mean, if it happens other places, it's not so apparent. you know, in D.C. and North Carolina, South Carolina, things like that. Seems like the brothers are trying to work in harmony in different groups to the same cause, but here it just gets slung to the wind. And, you know, I'm pretty tired of it. I know that you're pretty tired of it, but when you look at the whole broader picture, I mean, you have an important meeting, and then there are people in the meeting that know the next day they're going to meet with the governor, and they don't say anything. That's a hustle.
Yeah, you know, that's part of the discussion, Mr. Allen, that I'm hearing coming from individuals who have called and asked the sponsors of the meeting, the people that presided over the meeting, Coach McKenzie, Alfred Flowers. People are asking, well, why were they not told that as they were putting forward these ideas, concerns, and et cetera, that this was going to be handed post-haste to the governor of the state, because it made a lot of difference to how people were feeling. And you bring up a heck of a point, Mr. Allen, that it was never indicated by the one person who was in the meeting and met with the governor the following morning in an emergency meeting. Apparently they solicited the help of one of our elected officials in the Minnesota Senate to indicate to the governor that there was a need for an emergency meeting and that folks had all this information and thinking and thoughts and et cetera. And, I mean, that's well and good, but I feel bad for the other 30 African-Americans and one Caucasian who were in that room and who took the time. And, man, I got to tell you, I mean, you only have my word, but there were others that were there. I mean, there were some excellent ideas. There were some excellent programs that were being worked on. There were individuals there that have been putting their life on the line and trying to bring an end to this war that's going on across our city amongst our young people, if you will, the gangs and et cetera. I mean, just since that meeting, we've had 7 shootings, if you will. And so, you know, you have this happening. And I just wish that, you know, maybe Saturday's meeting of the NAACP, maybe there will be a report, a 5 or 6 or 8 page report. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? I mean, wow, I think our community is old and has earned that. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen?
Mr. Edwards, I've yet to see the report of the NAACP.
Well, you know, I'm just, I know we're accused as journalists of being negative, if you will, trying to be affirmative and positive here, but what it is what it is. I mean, you know, you touched on it. You know, folks are upset that some of us are talking about this meeting with the governor, and now I'm getting text messages from sources who I will not identify that there will be another meeting with the governor. And so I'm making this, suggestion. I'm not one of the facilitators of the meeting. I was a guest there. I'd like to, for the next meeting of the group that brought this information forward, I'm talking about the real group, I would like to suggest that even though this is a campaign and et cetera and we've got a crisis here in Minnesota, I'd like to suggest that the group ask the governor to invite them to the State House, if you will, and those 31 people, if you will, including the head of the homicide department or homicide unit, be asked to sit down with the governor and express some of those ideas. I'm recommending that. I have no power and control. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen? But
yeah,
that's the right way to do things. You know what I'm saying?
I agree 100%. And it's very important that, you know, we find out, you know, we haven't mentioned yet on this show in the few minutes we have here that, you know, they're talking about this retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of bring the black spokespersons together on one accord or whatever they're talking about, whatever their mantra is for that. They have not really reached out to anyone. It's like top secret G19 classified information. And these people, you know, just less than 3 months ago, I sat at an NAACP meeting, then as the second vice president of the Minneapolis NAACP, and heard someone sit across the table from me and said, we're going to work on getting 10,000 jobs.
But now,
like,
let me just, I have to interrupt because I know we're coming close, though we can go over if we decide. I just have received a text message here in Studio B, holding up my cell phone, et cetera. I'm being told that there is a video out right now that shows Mad Dads in a meeting, mostly white, titled Faith Patrol. I can't believe that. I'm texting back now. The texter is telling me that they stand by the text message that they've just sent. Now, I just can't understand that.
Well, I'm right here in Studio A in front of this big, beautiful computer, and I am going to see if we can even find anything like that here.
And wait a minute, another message is now coming. My God, the messages are coming in. They're outside on the corner. Now, that, I can tell you, brother, that's kind of dangerous the way racial tensions are in this town right now. But the people that are texting yours truly here are indicating that they're outside on the corner. I just can't believe that. This must be a mistake. You know what I'm saying? And, in fact, if Brother V.J. Smith is listening, our phone lines are open. Brother, give us a call. Update us, my brother, on what the Faith-Based Patrol is doing.
Yeah, really. That's what we need to know. We need to know that pretty quick. Yeah, I'm looking at this. Wow. Oh, Mr. Evers. I got to break this down. I've been looking for this report, and maybe I just been typing the wrong thing, but I just ran across the Mad Dads 2008 to 2011 report online. I'll be publishing this on the Independent News Network.
Okay.
And it says, people served through Mad Dads program events in 2011. They said 20,000.
20,000 people served. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Volunteer hours, 30,000.
Lord have mercy.
Contributions, $260,000 in 2011. And I'm like, wait a minute, 20,000. I mean, I'm having some trouble with that number. I really am having some trouble with that number right now. Because I don't think, even if you talk about all the vigils and all the repeat people, there hasn't been 20,000, you know?
I don't think so. Just like, but you know, my mathematicians that are consultants to my television program indicating that based on what's being reported, that almost a 500,000 hours easily have been worked by African Americans on the Viking Stadium, and I don't know how they could do that because there are no African Americans down there. You see none at all. I don't know what's going on. I just say it as a figure of speech. I'm just not understanding, you know, the comfort level of doing this.
Yeah, and we have a caller, Mr. Evers.
Let's get the caller, Don.
Caller, go ahead, you're live on the air. Go ahead, caller, you're live on the air.
Hello?
Yes. Mr. Mann,
how are you?
This is Doug Mann. I've been following most of your program tonight. I'm, you know, kind of, with the NAACP, it's funny that I should, you know, find out about the next meeting, you know, from your show.
Just for our listening audience, Mr. Mann, the gentleman is talking right now, is a member of the NAACP. Go ahead, Mr. Mann.
I had talked with folks in the NAACP about having a meeting with Governor Dayton and some others about their failure to enforce the Minnesota administrative rules related to equality of opportunity in education.
Well, Doug, let me stop you. Let me just stop you a minute. Is that something they have to read first to understand?
Quite possibly, yeah. There's
we're shooting in the wind again. But go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
The thing is, there's one of the more important rules is that the Commissioner of Education request an annual report from school districts that are racially segregated determine if there are if there's an unequal allocation of resources.
Mm-hmm.
Things like teacher things like high teacher turnover and high concentrations of inexperienced teachers in schools, in high poverty schools and schools that are filled with African Americans. That's a problem. I mean, it caused them some embarrassment when that was looked at a number of years ago, and there was some stuff published about it recently in the Star Tribune. You know, the problem hasn't gone away. We're seeing, you know, horrendous outcomes with African American students that we were talking about 15 years ago.
Oops.
You know, there's been no real improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's.
Is that the reason that sign went up across the street from 1250 West Broadway? For our listeners, that is the headquarters, the beautiful new headquarters, not quite 2 years old. Is that the reason that billboard went up, which raised some real questions about the authenticity of what the school district has been reporting, Mr. Mann? Are you aware of the sign?
No. What is the sign?
Well, the sign is a beautiful sign. Somebody had to pay a lot of money for it. It just raises questions about the competency of the special school district number one.
Yeah.
For those that haven't seen it, you may want to call up last night's television broadcast of both WCCO and KSTP, channels 4 and 5 here in our city. Yeah, you may want to take a look at it, Mr. Mann. That's an interesting billboard. And Nagley's, Mr. Allen, who is, of course, the signboard company, won't tell the district who it was that paid for the sign.
Well, right here, I have actually a copy of the sign up on our page today. It says,
"Oh, just read it to us, and for that, it helps and familiarize Mr. Mann with it."
It's right across from the school district headquarters. It says, "Minneapolis spends $21,000 per student, barely half graduate. Not cool." By Better Ed.
Of course, in our state, we spend $77,000 per inmate. Yeah. So we spend a little over three and a half times more on putting, you know, black students in the penitentiary than we do educating them. Man, maybe that helps us gentlemen get a better feeling on why there is such a, what's the word they use, such a disparity.
Yes.
Now, there's another thing that I heard in the news while I was reading on the internet recently is the decline in the number of black teachers across the country. And Chicago, you know, there's been, you know, since the late 1970s, the absolute number.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. And there's been a significant, proportionally, there's been a significant reduction of black teachers in the Minneapolis Public Schools and the St. Paul Public School System, which has not been addressed. In fact, we have a tape of a meeting, if you will, and speech by Superintendent Bernadette Johnson, which he talked about 2 years ago that was going to be addressed, and that they had a number of urban-type programs and et cetera. And the numbers continue to slide right down. In fact, Mr. Mann was on our program, if you remember, Mr. Allen, a number of months ago when he was doing his courageous thing about the People's Stadium, and he reminded us that the Minneapolis Board of Education Special School District number one is Mr. Mann, about 7 years delinquent on adhering to the state statute on the kind of report that you talked about at the top of this, at the top of your joining us on the air? What is it, about 7, 8, 9 years since we last had a report?
Well, probably 2006 or 2007 might have been the last.
Well, that, my math tells me that turns out to be 7 to 8 years. Maybe even
right,
nine.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, 2006 to 2014. Yeah. All right, Mr. Allen. Mr. Mann, thank you. Appreciate calling in. We'll be waiting to hear from you again.
Can we have another call?
All
right. Okay, stand by.
Caller,
you're live on the air.
Uh-oh.
You know,
yes, hello.
You know, hey, how you doing? I'm calling from the Midwest here.
Okay.
And name is Mr. Pianchi. You know, I'll listen to you talk about the education. I guess I've studied the education as it applies to African American children in this country since Crown Heights, Bedford Stuy.
All right, you're talking about New York City. Go ahead on, sir.
And as it applied to African-American black children. And somebody said that Minnesota receives $21,000 per child. Well, in Kansas City, Missouri, they spent $1 billion during the DSEG era. A judge asked them, what does it take in order to change things around?
Right.
And they ended up spending $1 billion. They had pet zoos. They had UN-type auditorium where they had translators and so on and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen all of this myself, and I'm here to tell you there's none of this is going to work the way the president said. And I don't know if any of y'all work in the public school district. Or not. And there's nothing wrong with the kids. There's nothing wrong with the children. It's the people. It's black society as a whole, really, because others ain't going to take care of their problem. But let me give you a suggestion. One, you as a school district, as a community, need to be able to recall school board members, and we can't do that here in Missouri where I am, and I'm about ready to say you can't do it there in Minnesota neither.
There is no recall provision under color of law in the state of Minnesota for any elected official. So you're right on point.
That's
sir.
Crazy. That is really
silly. Let me say this to you, though, because you, I think, called us a couple years ago. You called in. I'm very familiar with the Kansas City districts, both on both sides of the river, because my mother, who is still alive at age 94, God bless her, taught in the Kansas City public schools for 52 years. And she taught at Yates for many, many years, W.W. Yates. And I used to listen to her and other black educators in Kansas City 35, 40 years ago talk in terms that you saw this coming, okay, the bankrupting of the Kansas City School District as an example and what it was going to do to the future of African-American children in that city. So I'm very much cognizant, sir, and appreciate you giving us a background and a history. Because I'm afraid that Minneapolis and St. Paul, or Kansas City and Kansas City, if you will, or St. Louis, if
it's
you will,
it's going to be the same way.
Yeah, all the same way. It's a pattern
and you know
practice
what else?
Of the diseducation
and
of the black child.
And you know, I'm going to tell you this: that old system don't work. You got too much influence from the NEA and AFT, the school teachers union. You got Vanguard organizations that would come out and sue you if you suggest doing something different. You know, when African Americans are polled, they say they want school choice. But you have these organizations that say, no, you don't need school choice. So that there is a contradiction. You have, in today's times, the parents need to have school choice. You need to get the federal government out the damn way. And in many cases, you have too much state control through the influence of these teachers' unions as they affect your elected state officials. I've seen it here. I see it everywhere, and that's just, I mean, that's a sad pitch. It's nothing wrong with the children. It's the system and the society that lets this crap continue to go on and on.
Absolutely. All right, sir. Thank you. Appreciate you from calling out of Kansas.
Thank you. I hope when I call 2 years again from now, I hope we ain't talking on the same topic.
I know it. It's a bad topic.
All right.
Take care, sir. Take care.
All right,
thank
sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Out of my home city of Kansas City, Missouri. Yeah, what the man is saying is absolutely correct. Mr. Allen, are we getting ready to wrap it, or are you going to take us to the top of the hour, or how do you want to do this?
Well, we can wrap it because we're like 8 minutes into the reserve here. And scheduled for the hour. So
unless we don't want to cut off anything, Mr. Allen, if we still have somebody who's waiting to call in.
No, if anybody wants to call in, this is it. 347-426-3904. Again, 347-426-3904.
We'll give them a couple of minutes. By the way, 4th of July, in fact, we can hear sometimes we can't tell if it's the firecrackers or the 38s and 44 mags and in the Sentra, but 4th of July, you know, if nothing else, be safe. Be safe.
Yes, be safe.
God knows, Mr. Allen, that in our cities here, particularly in Minneapolis, we need to really offer our prayers for African Americans, because we're going down again in record numbers with respect to the violence and the shootings and et cetera. So, all right, man. Hey, Mr. Allen, you know, let James Brown take us home, man, to the 4th of July.
All right.
Thank you.